stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone.
Lewis Hamilton takes the win and not much else happened. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Mate.
I cannot
believe you are the world champion! Good evening, everybody. I am Andre Harrison, and welcome to episode 139. God, there's too many of these going on already. It's Motorsport 101. We're rapidly closing in on 150. It's kind of ridiculous. A pretty heaped weekend of motorsport with not a lot of actual substance in it. It's kind of weird that one turns out. Watch how the show ends up being 2.5 hours long anyway. Because that's what we do on this show. We find substance in things that there isn't any in. Because that's what we do on this show. Anyway, with me as always is Mr. Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Hey, yeah. Definitely nothing happened. Definitely only Lewis Hamilton won. Our friends at Haas would like to imagine that nothing else happened that race.
Hashtag not King's F1 team. Not King's F1 team. Well, they kind of, like, too many Magnussen-related discretions, apparently. Like, yeah. That's the reason in the official press release, for better or worse. And in the blue corner, representing Nashville, Tennessee, as always, Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
Hi. My favorite NHL team got knocked out of the playoffs in a tough 7-game series against the Winnipeg Jets. A young team with a lot of potential, and they played a great series, and good for them, and no, this is terrible, and I want to redo on this. God damn it.
Like RJ sounded like a urinating tree video on that one, and it wasn't pretty.
My only solace is that this is probably the year that Alexander Ovechkin finally wins a cup. Or it could go to an expansion team in their very first season. The possibilities are endless. The possibilities have four.
They're scary and terrifying.
Like, I have a feeling the Vegas is going to go all the way, and the 30-for-30 on it will be beautiful.
How do you get back from that?
You don't. Like,
how do you top that?
You've peaked. You've peaked in the first year of your existence. It's a bit like Braun GP all over again, basically.
Damn, sounds like my first time.
Hey! Oh, dear. Now we've got the crude intro out of the way. Let's get some places where you can find us real quick. We are on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow our personal handles, you can follow us at Harrison101HD, at Ryan Eric King, that's with two Ks, and at RJ O'Connell. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to both this show and to our sister show Bike Live, which will be back for its 60th episode this weekend. Good lord, that's a lot of episodes. We'll be talking all about World Superbikes at Imola this past weekend, as Jonathan Rea made history with a double victory and tied Carl Fogarty's all-time record of 59 World Superbike victories.
He's very good.
He's extremely good. It kind of makes you wonder, like, just how terrifying his numbers would be if he wasn't so loyal to Honda for all those years. the thought alone is terrifying. But also, just a ridiculously awesome all-round weekend. We had the final swan song of Keenan Sofoglu, and he didn't even actually race in the end, which I thought was kind of funny. But, the final race of Keenan Sofoglu, and Anna Carrasco absolutely destroying the World Supersport 300 field. That is a bad motherfucker right there. My God. Pole position by almost a second and winning the race itself by nearly 14 seconds.
I'm so proud of you, Anna. I know you're probably not listening to this or Bike Live, but we're so proud of you regardless.
Like, yeah, I had to dust off the super beat him down hashtag on that one because, oh, Lord. Anna Carrasco making history, the first woman in a world championship race to qualify on pole position, quickly followed by the first woman to ever lead a world championship in motorcycle racing in a world championship, which is fucking brilliant. So, Anna Carrasco, we salute you. magnificent performance. And a brilliant Supersport race as well, with Jules Clazel once again holding off a rampant field behind him, as Lucas Mahias actually bottled one for once. All that, Jonathan Rea's double, Anna Carrasco's magnificence, and a preview for Le Mans in MotoGP this weekend. And if you haven't listened to episode 59 already, go listen to that too. Free wide, all talking about the weekend at Jerez in MotoGP. And as I called it on Twitter, the world's most disappointing threesome between Andrea Dovizioso, Jorge Lorenzo, and Danny Pedrosa, as Marquez took a race he really shouldn't have won, Lorenzo Baldassare owned Moto2, and Aaron Canet turned into a bowling ball in Moto3, as Philip Otal finally replicated his dad after 91 attempts and won his first Moto3 race. All good times indeed. So check both of those shows out if you haven't already. $10 gets you early access to our Discord server, where we actually have four people listening to this show right now. I'm in front of a live studio audience.
What in the hell is wrong with you?
Like, the funny thing is that, like, none of these guys actually are Patreon backers, so it's all like the guys just stole our rent money at this point, besides Lewis. He edits the show. He's okay. Henry's in here. He actually paid for his spot. Everyone else are friggin' trespassers. I'm joking. Love you guys. Hope you're enjoying the show. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, shall we get into the Spanish Grand Prix?
Yeah.
We'll break down this 5 out of 10 race after this brief musical interlude. Yes, it's that time of year again. It's the Spanish Grand Prix. And you know what's funny? Like there was actually some optimism going into this one, you know. If you're a Ferrari fan, then definitely it was like, ooh, like is Ferrari actually good? This seems like the test for them, given it's the testing track, and obviously these guys have done thousands of laps around Catalunya. There was actually some optimism, because I remember last year's race was actually really good. Probably the race of the year if you don't include Baku's shit show.
Should we have to mention the slight downer to open this up, where Williams are kind of officially in crisis mode, because they have, like, their technical director has left, quote unquote, but he got fired.
Way to bring down the mood, King.
And that's before we even talk about McLaren's new nose.
The triple snout, as it was affectionately nicknamed by Will Buxton on Twitter.
Yeah, I've heard of you can't put lipstick on a pig, but I literally have not heard let's make our pig more of a pig.
Man, the early concepts for Lightning McQueen and Disney Pixar's Cars, absolutely terrifying, folks.
Can I just say as well, on a brief tangent, we had a new Patreon backer literally 30 seconds up before the musical interlude came in. That's brilliant. You know who you are, Olivia. Thank you. Beautifully timed, may I add.
Dre peer pressuring people to pay.
Please give us your money. Our race cars are starving. Our PlayStation 4s and NetSpots 1s are starving.
Professional, Dre. Stay professional. Deep breaths.
Deep breaths.
Woo! Brilliant. I love this show, by the way. Like, never change. Never change, fans of the show. Never change.
I didn't actually watch this race. I was on a road trip back from family stuff. So I got to listen to it on the radio on the F1 app. Gotta say, I think Jack Nicklaus and Jolyon Palmer did a tremendous job of
They're great.
Punching up and keeping me engaged from what came across as a very dull and uninteresting race, even by their own admission afterwards.
I have to admit as well, like, I know he gets a lot of shit on the internet because his F1 career never really got off the ground, but Jolyon Palmer is a tremendous pundit. Like, he's taken to broadcasting like a duck to water. I think he is superb at what he does.
Yeah, you know, like,
I would listen to that again.
Like, let me just check. Yeah, Zoe isn't here, so let me say this real quick. Jack Nichols and Julian Palmer are the best commentary duo.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Nichols and Dario are this upcoming weekend we're gonna get Nichols and Coulthard. So like I'm sorry, Scottish F1 drivers, but Julian Palmer.
Like did you just admit this live on the air?
Yes. No one tells you, please.
Spanish Grand Prix. That was a race. That was a race that had cars in it and went to a predetermined distance.
Yeah, it certainly existed. It absolutely happened, and we're very glad it did. Qualifying was definitely interesting. We had a massive variety of people either not knowing what was the faster tire between the super soft and the soft compound, which I thought was very interesting. Everybody, all the front runners were qualified in Q2 to start the race on the soft tire. And then when we got to Q3, Hamilton put down a really nice banker lap on a super soft. And then Ferrari came out on the soft tires at the end of the stint. And like Vettel was only a tenth off pole position, and I was like, okay, what the hell just happened? None of this session made any fucking sense. But it was a very, very close qualifying session. Only a tenth and change covering, Hamilton, Valtteri, and Sebastian. But it was a Mercedes 1-2. Stop me if you've heard that one before. With Hamilton on pole from Valtteri by 0.04 of a second. In the end, very good effort from Valtteri. Very nearly steal that one from under Hamilton's nose. The race itself, not so fun. We had, the first lap was definitely all sorts of crazy. We had Sebastian sweep around the outside of Valtteri to take second, which was a beautiful start from Seb. But all hell broke loose in the midfield as, for the third time in this race weekend, Romain Grosjean lost control of his car. Outside of turn three, he's on the marbles, he's on the dirty part of the track, he's tried to go the long way around. It's safe to say it hasn't worked. He's got into a bit of a spin, he's tried to save it, and next thing you know, oh wait, that's Pierre Gasly's car. Bang.
Crunch.
And then Nico Hülkenberg gets collected in the smoke as well. You may have just seen it on F1 Twitter by the time you this episode goes out, the onboard of Lance Stroll, who seemingly narrowly missed that incident, but I'd say by about 3 inches. It could have been even more disastrous, but guys, a messy one for just an awful weekend in general for Roman.
Right, and he was in a tough spot, basically, according to the aforementioned Julian Palmer. He decided to floor it because the other alternative that he had that most people suggested, well, why doesn't he just hit the brakes? Well, that would have just made him come to a stop sideways a lot sooner and made the incident a whole lot worse than it actually was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, instinct-wise, Grosjean, I think, did what any F1 driver would do in that scenario, and that's try to save the car from going into a spin like any F1 driver would. I don't blame him for that part of it, but,
Like, apparently, he told the stewards, pretty much, that he decided that he was going to keep his foot in it because he felt like if he pretty much braked or did anything otherwise to try to save the car, he would end up in the middle of the track. He thought by hitting the gas, he'd be able to throw his car across to the other side of the track before anyone was able to hit him.
You realize...
He did hit the gas, all right. He did hit the gas, all right. That is Gasly's three-letter abbreviation on the official gas.
I'll say this much, do you think the stewards immediately called bullshit on that explanation? There's no way he's thinking that in the middle of trying to save that spin. No chance. And as Henry points out in our Discord chat, like he said, the only thing he did really was just cause an enormous smoke screen.
They said smoking was banned in Formula One. Well, they thought wrong.
It was like a clip out of Wacky Races back in the day. Jesus.
And the thing is, the smoke screen made the accident worse.
Exactly, because next thing, though, when the smoke clears, all we see is a broken Renault and a broken Toro Rosso. Like I said, because of the incident, he's clattered into the side of Gasly and Hülkenberg. Three cars are out of the race, and the safety car was immediately deployed. So, Thanks for that, Roman. He'll, as a result of this incident, he was given a 3-place grid penalty for Monaco, which might as well be drop 3 positions for Monaco in 2 weeks' time, and 2 penalty points on his license, because the stewards immediately called bullshit on Grosjean's terrible explanation of why he'd spun. Good lord. Also, like, on the restart, shout out to Fernando Alonso, proving the man is still a goddamn legend for that. Did you see that turn 3 pass on Esteban Ocon?
Yeah.
Good lord. Like, okay. Like, I am not the Alonso guy in this Discord server by any stretch, but I'm like, that man still has some quality. Like, hi, RJ. How you doing today? God, that man can drive on occasion. Good lord. That was a brilliant bit of work from Fernando. I know he was on the super soft tire, but still, to put, like, that was a beautiful turn 3 overtake on Esteban. More on him in a bit, but get into the meat and potatoes of this race further down the stretch. You know it, I know it, and I think F1 was kind of due this. Guess what, guys? We went back to 2014 via time machine. Lewis Hamilton dominates and wins the race by 20 seconds.
Is the unseasoned meat and unsalted potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You get butter. I believe that's about it.
It's the plain jacket potato you get in one of those terrible shopping centres. Yes, Hamilton was completely unopposed right from the start. No one was able to come close. Dominates from pole position, wins by 20.6 seconds in the end from his teammate. He broke Michael Schumacher's all-time record of most wins from pole position. I believe that's his 43rd, I want to say, from pole. And he's now the only driver in history to have 30 consecutive points finishes, dating back through the 2016 season, which is just ridiculous, to say the least. Guys, like, for the first time, it felt like the real Lewis Hamilton had come to play this season, didn't it?
He did. He's back.
Yeah, it was scary. It was like traumatic flashback to, like, peak Mercedes dominance.
You mean like last year? Like
and the year before that. And the year before that. Though it was Mercedes dominance with a different dude in the second car.
Yeah. Oh, God. Not much you can really say about that. Just a magnificent performance from Lewis Hamilton. When he's on that sort of form, he doesn't lose. Period. It's just as simple as that, really. The battle for second was somewhat intriguing as well. I mean, as we mentioned, Sebastian took second in the early going. Couldn't really shake off Valtteri, but, you know, dirty air meant the good old-fashioned 1.6 second gap between them at the front. Who isn't a fan of that these days, right? But after a second safety car, Ferrari, clearly bored of the race situation that was going on in front of them, thought, hey, we'll box Sebastian. What's the worst that could happen?
Jeff decided that the alternate strategy was going to work better, and he asked Vettel if he wanted to go with the new strategy or stick to the old one, and Vettel just decided to confirm the new strategy without even thinking that Barcelona is the ultimate track of track position. In fact, more people have won from the front row here than at Monaco, percentage-wise, of course.
I'm going to shoot the strategy department, King. I'm gonna open fire with a potato gun.
And the irony is that this was won back after Bottas looked like he was going to be in clear sailing for second place because Vettel had come in way too early. He got stuck behind Kevin Magnussen after his first stop. But don't worry, Mercedes are going to get sticky fingers and cause Bottas to come out behind Sebastian Vettel. But not before Vettel cuts in between Bottas and one of the Haas cars through the middle in a pass into turn one. That was neat.
A reminder that Sebastian Vettel is a goddamn brilliant driver when he wants to be. But yeah, that was some bullshit. And I want to say a shout out to one of my favorite league mates, League Races, friend of the show and all round good pal, TRL Martin, who immediately tweeted me and said, "Are you okay?" at Harrison101HD. To answer your question, Gary, no, I was not okay. I was at work and I was head desking when I saw they picked Sebastian. Like, I immediately said, "Well, that's bullshit. Like, I was...
That are you okay reminds me of, like, any time you have, like, a terminal accident in the F1 video games and Jeff comes over the radio and says, are you okay?
This is all Jeff's fault.
I'm
sorry, Jeff Codemasters, we're blaming you squarely for this.
I blame Marcus Ericsson for this terrible strategic decision. That is my statement, and I am sticking to it.
Ericsson only finished 13th.
Still his fault. But yeah, Sebastian, he couldn't make any inroads on Max Verstappen due to dirty air and general Catalan bullshit. He ends up finishing.
But hey, at least Max Verstappen's car was intact, right?
Makes a change, right? The way his season's playing out so far. But yes, Verstappen had a little bit of a plonker moment of his own when he puts the power down coming out of turn 12 and basically runs into the back of Lance Stroll's tire and damages his front end plate. But amazing, his car was okay.
His car was okay enough to circumnavigate the Barcelona circuit, one of the most downforce heavy tracks, and start to pull away from Sebastian Vettel despite not having all of his front downforce available to him.
And all the
even
tires.
Even if things seem to go wrong for Max Verstappen, somehow they go right.
To be fair, he was kind of due one of those, wasn't he? I think he had exhausted like the karmic gods for the last three rounds through some of his driving. As Charles puts in the chat, is Verstappen better than Vettel? I say King boot him out of the Discord server. quite frankly, kill him. I call bullshit on this entire strategic endeavor. Ferrari, get your shit together, to say the least. This is like the third race in a row where we were on for a pretty darn good result, especially given second didn't really look on after qualifying, and yeah, Ferrari found some way to screw the pooch. Can we stop doing this, please, Ferrari? Because all of a sudden, Sebastian is now 17 points behind Lewis Hamilton, and it doesn't feel like he should be 17 points behind, given the way this season has played out so far. But
yeah. Ferrari are getting cost points as well, because poor old Kimi Raikkonen just can't get them the points that they need to.
Indeed, you were saying there, King?
Yeah, it feels like the championship is level, but... like, Ferrari are not making this easy for anyone, including Kimi Raikkonen.
All I will say is, in response to that claim, King, is, I told you, Internet. What have I been telling you people since February? Ferrari will find some way to pull defeat out of the jaws of victory. And I'm starting to get that feeling now that the narcotic is back in the room. Hello, everybody.
I feel bad for Thomas. Poor little Thomas from last year.
Oh.
He has a buddy now. Joaquin, the Fernando Alonso fan who was all hyped up to see Fernando Alonso in qualifying, got to meet the team during the race, and they just so happened to get him out of those McLaren Honda overalls.
I can't possibly imagine how or why they did that. They did such a thing. It's like, get the kid on brand, give him one of Alonso's caps, get him out of those shitty Honda overalls, get with the program. Also, Thomas's last year's news. Bye, Thomas. No one cares. We had a picture of him in the paddock on Thursday, which was lovely. And everyone was like, oh, wait, it's yesterday's news. We got some kid on the hard camera during qualifying who's an Alonso fan. Bring him in instead. Is this going to be a Spanish tradition now? We're just going to have invite 6-year-old kids into the paddock whenever somebody has a good or bad day, if they can get on the hard camera. Is that it?
you can also invite man children in their late 20s from Buckinghamshire, because they were clearly angling to get into the paddock. As well.
It's one way of looking at it, I suppose, isn't it? But yeah, shout out to Joaquin, who was a charmingly delightful little child. It was in Alonso's garage throughout the second part of the weekend after qualifying. What an adorable kid! I'm getting to an age now where I find kids more adorable than annoying. Now, like I'm 26 in August. Somebody help me! the dad in me is starting to come out now, and it's a terrible, terrible feeling. Speaking of McLaren, like we mentioned Fernando Alonso earlier. How fun was the scrap he had with Charles Leclerc?
Oh, that was a lot of fun. That was probably the most fun after the first safety car that we had all day. And Charles Leclerc getting in the points again, finishing 10th. That's Sauber's first back-to-back points finishes since October 2015.
Felipe Nasr back in the day. Who would have thought it? Yeah, it was like... Like, shout out to Sauber for being racy. Charles Leclerc, another great performance. Marcus Ericsson, again, showing what a brilliant defensive driver he can be. Giving Carlos Sainz enough room, like, basically a car whip and, like, a piece of cigarette paper between him and the turn and turn one when he was and Carlos Sainz was trying to pass him, which I thought was funny.
You know who gives less distance than that, though?
Mm.
Is Kevin Magnussen.
Oh, God.
Now, he started the weekend looking pretty rough when he tried to edge Charles Leclerc off the track in free practice. And then somehow came home and finished best of the rest in sits after qualifying 7th. He had a quiet day at the office. He didn't make any mistakes, and he got to hang out with Lewis Hamilton afterwards.
they looked like they smoked about 3 pounds of weed on that Instagram caption. It's like, I put a quote on sort of like, when you have a good sesh. like, they looked high as fuck in that picture together. I'm not even...
Is it going to be IHOP or Waffle House today, Kevin?
He's feeling a Denny's Grand Slam this week, clearly. Yeah. So, if you haven't seen the picture doing the rounds, look it up. It's like Magnussen looks high as hell on that one. it looked like a peak picture of how do you do, fellow kids. But, yeah. Apparently, him and Lewis Hamilton are all good now. I didn't know they weren't on good terms, to be honest with you, but that's news to me. So shout out to Kevin Magnussen. It's like I want to borrow a quote from RJ, because me and him are on voice chat during the qualifying session on Saturday, and he made a very strong point about the Haas team in general when he said straight up, like, like, Haas is in kind of a pickle when their really safe driver is making really silly mistakes and not having a good season. I mean, this is now Grosjean's 5th consecutive race out of the points, the longest streak of his F1 career. That wasn't pretty. While on the other hand, Kevin Magnussen is probably having his best season in F1 to date, despite driving like a pillock half the time. It's really weird how this turns out, because Magnussen has genuinely been excellent so far this season. I mean, one of the best drivers in the field, pound for pound.
All that stuff.
It sounds like that closing message from Team America World Police. Where sometimes if you really want to be good at your job, you have to be a dick.
It looks that way, doesn't it? yeah, Magnussen, you know, he's driving excellently this season. There's a reason why he's been pretty much in the top 5 of the power rankings pretty much all season long, if you read into that sort of thing on the F1 website. It's justified, and it's with good reason. He's driving brilliantly at the moment. He really is. So, yeah, K-Mag, best of the rest, once again, doing an excellent job for the Haas team. We seem to finally be cashing in some of those points scoring opportunities, unlike earlier in the season. Another one.
Sainz in 7th.
Yeah, great drive from
Alonso
him.
Alonso in 8th, Sergio Perez in 9th.
Indeed. We have to mention as well the other Toro Rosso that was involved in this weekend, Brendan Hartley, who had a hell of an incident in FP3. Put a wheel on the grass going up towards the very fast 160 mile an hour now turn 9 in these cars. These cars are lightning fast now. I mean, the track record got obliterated during this Grand Prix. A 160 mile an hour wreck. He puts a wheel on the grass. He spins backwards into the gravel trap and into the wall at turn 9. And I'm shout out to our man Kai, the man, the myth, the legend, aka known as 50 Bucks on Twitter, always doing the Lord's work when it comes to ripping F1 TV coverage and sticking it on the internet via totally legal means. But there was a brilliant gif of them trying to crane the car back on, you know, obviously back onto the recovery vehicle, and the whole back of the power unit just completely falls out and collapses like the Titanic. It's a beautiful scene. My God.
It looked like something that when you're walking your dog out in the park that you have to pick up with like a plastic bag and some plastic gloves and throw into a very specially marked bin. That's what that looked like.
Indeed, it wasn't pretty, and now as a result, the rumours have started swirling about his F1 future being cut short quite quickly. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on our own Discord during qualifying, RJ, and like, there's rumblings that Pierre, like, you know, that not Pierre, guys, sorry, I was gonna say that Pascal Wehrlein could be making a comeback.
Yeah. Crafty just kind of offhandedly mentioned it during like Q1 or something, like, oh yeah, Pascal Wehrlein might be a interesting option. They have Jake Dennis, who has pretty much given up on all of single seater racing at this point, testing their car at Barcelona this week. He's Red Bull simulator driver. I don't think he's gonna get it. But now again, Red Bull are in that spot where you don't have anybody waiting in the rings that's ready just yet, unless you really want a hot shot Dan Ticktum up there.
Which they can't.
No points.
They can't,
not enough points
anyway. So it's just like, where's Sebastian Buemi's number when you need it? That would be very bad for Brendan Hartley, because he's a very good driver. The results have not been there. I would give him a little bit more time to kind of feel his way around things. And if it doesn't work out, well, hey, Brendan Hartley can probably get a top drive anywhere else he lands. Remember, he almost signed with Chip Ganassi instead of that Ed Jones guy.
Indeed. I mean, I wish Brendan the best. He's a good dude, and he's an excellent driver. It's just not come together for him just yet in Formula One, and it doesn't help when you've got a GP2 champion behind you in Pierre Gasly, a guy that, again, you know, runner-up in Super Formula as well. He's got a tremendous single-seater pedigree. And that's your teammate, and he's going to be hungry for a Red Bull seat in future, given we talked a lot about Red Bull's, you know, inherently toxic team structure on occasion. But, yeah.
And he's a much spicier radio quote as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. Also, we have to mention this as well, the other Red Bull, because any chance I can get to take the piss out of the Daniel Ricciardo fandom, I will take with both hands. Man spun under a virtual safety car.
Oh, dear.
Didn't Sorokin do this too? Didn't, like, two people spin under that same virtual safety car? Daniel Ricciardo came away with that better. He finished a solid fifth. Sergei Sorokin did not come away so good. He finished 14th, last of the cars that ran.
Yeah. Wasn't pretty on that one. So, lol, Daniel Ricciardo, or as the internet now starts to call him, Daddy Ricciardo, apparently, because, you know, internet. Yeah, fun times indeed. But, we have to mention this as well. There was a lot of noise made about the tyres this weekend as well, because Pirelli took up Mercedes' suggestion, having a smaller tread on the tyres this weekend. A lot of people kicked up a stink tying that to Mercedes' performance for the weekend.
Don't do that.
Like, amazingly, the person to squash that, of all people, this morning was Sebastian Vettel, who's taking part in the Barcelona test. Said, and I quote on the record, having the smaller tread, like, if they had a larger tread, it actually probably would have made Ferrari's situation even worse. So he said that Pirelli made the right decision in having a smaller tread tyre. It made the situation better for everybody, because apparently during the test today, he blistered a normal set of the Pirelli tyres for this weekend. So, yeah, Pirelli was right. We were all wrong. Everybody shut the fuck up. Okay.
And on an entirely unrelated note, everybody is bringing Hypersofts to the party at Martico.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to get 50 laps.
Of course, because that's the Pirelli way these days. One stopper with, like, super, super, super Hypersoft, ultra soft tires. You know, even though they probably lost, like, half distance because Pirelli. Full red and
bubble gum.
Bubble gum tyres. They've even got the colour down and everything. So, fun times. Here's the full result for that race. Lewis Hamilton winning in the end from Valtteri Bottas in second. He's 20.5 seconds in second. Like, by the way, I sincerely apologise to Ryan King and all four members of the Valtteri Bottas fan club. I was wrong. Turns out driver's pretty good. Who'd have thought it? Shut up, King. full apology via the Drebrief series later this week. Max Verstappen finishes in third, just a few... Whoop. just a few temps ahead of Sebastian Vettel. I accidentally knocked my mouse out of my PC for a second there. That was clever. well done, Dre, you idiot. Sebastian Vettel in fourth. Daniel Ricciardo 50 seconds back in fifth. He was the last man on the lead lap. Kevin Magnussen a lap down in sixth place ahead of Carlos Sainz Jr. in seventh, Fernando Alonso eighth, Sergio Perez ninth, and Charles Leclerc, as mentioned, in tenth. Great job from Lance Stroll to finish in 11th, a good result all things considered for the team. Brendan Hartley in 12th. Mark, I think that's his best F1 result today, actually, isn't it? Geez.
No, he finished 10th. He was 10th in
Baku. Oh, yes, quite right. The point in Baku, quite right. My memory is short, clearly. Brendan Hartley, 12th. Marcus Ericsson, 13th. The great wall of Marcus is still very strong, though, indeed. Sorokin, 13th. The last of the finishers in 14th place. Stoffel van Dorn retired of a gearbox problem. Like, oh, there's the old McLaren unreliability, remember? Good times. Esteban Ocon had an oil leak, didn't make the end. Raikkonen had not one, but two power unit-related issues, the race one being the turbo. And, of course, as mentioned, the three opening lap retirements of Grosjean, Gasly, and Hülkenberg. So, now, Lewis Hamilton leads the championship by 17 points from Sebastian Vettel. Fun times indeed.
Yeah. So it's getting a little spicy between Bottas and Raikkonen for third place. They're 10 points apart, and Ricciardo's just behind them, another point away, 11 points back of Bottas in fifth.
Indeed. Good times for all involved on that one. A good weekend indeed. What did you guys make of Spain in general then?
It felt like an okay start of the European season. Mm-hmm. Keyword being at start. Like, it by itself, it was a nothing burger, as you would say.
That's a very Dre catchphrase. Well played there, King. That's well used.
I would just based on like every a very run of the mill. Let's see, 2.5 Copa del Reyes out of 5.
Yeah, good reference of Barcelona's trophy habit there and their unbeaten season. Oh, wait, they were beaten 5-4 by Levante. That was a great game of football. You rest Lionel Messi for the final game of the season for no reason whatsoever, and you lose your unbeaten season. Hilarious. Well played, Barcelona. That's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Right. Should we get into 4 minutes?
Yeah, one thing before we move on. Sure. We almost forgot about it.
Sure.
Besides the newer specification tire, another new piece of tech was brought to this weekend in Spain.
Oh, is this Ferrari's halo mirrors?
Yeah.
The ones that were now going to be banned for being an aero device?
Yeah. How is it considered not an aero device? Like, have you seen it with the secondary with a little second support from that winglet down to the mirror, saying, "Yeah, it's a support for the mirror, guys."
I kind of had a feeling this day would come. To be fair, like it was kind of begging for it. Someone was like, you know, we're gonna put a mirror on the halo. Like, somebody was gonna be the first to try it. And it happened to be Ferrari, and it's been banned now for Monaco in 2 weeks' time, which is, you know, hardly a surprise, really, given the obvious advantage it was going to bring to the table. Everyone, like, they brought it, all the teams immediately kicked up a stink, which, to be fair, was pretty justified on this one. But yeah, you won't be seeing that in Monaco, thankfully, in a fortnight's time. But props to Ferrari for trying to, you know, think outside the box. I could always appreciate that. A little bit of ingenuity sometimes goes a long way. Formula 2, everybody, and welcome to the ART Grand Prix weekend, in one way or another, because they now have a free race win streak, as both their drivers split victories this weekend in Catalunya. Formula 2. Turns out George Russell is really good at race cars. Who knew?
He's really good. It's not like there's just one standout British driver in the field. Mm. Turns out there's two. And there's actually more than that. But we'll get to that in a bit.
Indeed. More on that in a bit. Yeah, George Russell takes the feature race victory from a hard chase in Nick DeVries, who was pretty much on Russell's tail the entire race. with Lando Norris right there in third as well. A very competitively closely fought race. To be fair, it wasn't the most dramatic Formula 2 race in the world. There's been crazier ones than this. Little bit of a rain threat in the sprint race as well. But I have to point out one incident here. Did you guys see Luis de la Traz? What the hell was that?
What is de la Traz doing?
Well, it actually does matter what Luis de la Traz was doing, because that did force a safety car intervention that could have turned the race on its head. It ultimately didn't, but that was still just like, whoa. Whoa, Lewis, what are you doing?
He and Sean Galil are driving side by side down the home straight, and under braking, De La Traz completely turns into Galil's car, who did nothing against the rules, no late moves, no swerves, anything like that. De La Traz has literally just turned into him, and they've both gone off, and that both ended their races. That was one of the most boneheaded things I've seen on a racetrack in quite some time. And this is a season where...
That was in a race where the MP Motorsport teammates, Ralph Boschung and Roberto Merhi, hit each other going in that same corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just...
I mean, De La Traz, if you're ever in Southeast Asia, you're never going to want to go inside a KFC. Just, avoid KFC at all costs.
Yeah, the man is getting salmonella poisoning. There's no way that... He's going to be allowed in some...
Popeyes is better anyway, Lewis. It's fine.
What is it with these people and controversial statements on this week's show? Isn't that normally my job? But, that was one of the real highlights of the feature race. Just De La Traz driving like a complete idiot. MP Motorsport self-destructing was also quite funny. That was all sorts of mad. The sprint race, oh boy, just as crazy, arguably even more so. We had a threat of rain over the horizon. The track did get a bit slippery out there, to say the least. And someone almost died. The halo got put to the test, and it passed with flying colors. As Tanosuke Makino, his halo was put to the test. As next thing you know, Nerei Fukuzumi's Arden car was literally on top of it as it drives over the side of the car.
I woke up to this news at about 5:30. I saw the bulletin Makino and Fukuzumi had a crash. I'm like, God damn it. So I go back to sleep. About a half hour later, I see what happened. Okay, that was almost very bad. But still, damn it. Why do you got to take each other out like this?
Yeah.
Oh dear, it wasn't pretty, but as Makino was quick to point out on Twitter, I'm very glad I had my halo, was the literal quote that he said in English, because if it weren't for that halo, he might have been decapitated. I'm not even exaggerating when I say this. The halo might have saved its first life. Anyone that still wants to talk about this halo not being useful, well, there's your walk-in evidence. Maybe this whole cockpit protection issue is a little bit more of an active one than people would care to admit. Just saying. Meanwhile, in the sprint race itself, as mentioned, the other ART Grand Prix driver took victory as Jack Aitken took the sprint race win, which means all three, well, four if you include Alex Albon, who technically was born in London, have now won a Grand Prix already, which is hilarious. Sky Sports F1 right now are writing all the positive headlines saying the hype is paying off. Bring back Johnny Herbert.
Pretty soon, Johnny Herbert might actually pay attention to Jack Aitken on commentary at some point.
You mean calling Mr. Russell George like he did during Baku, yeah?
Yeah, that means, so far this season, we're six races in, only one non-British-born driver even has a race win.
Wow, yeah, that's Markeloff, isn't it?
Markeloff in the Bahrain sprint. Yeah, only guy.
Yeah, it's kind of like this Formula 2 season is turning out to be quite spicy at the moment, isn't it?
It's very spicy. We got some good news just a couple days ago that Alexander Albon does have a full season deal with Dams in place.
Yay!
Which means he's going to finish out a season where he's starting off strong in championship contention. He's 13 points out of Lando Norris's lead. Two podiums for Norris keeps him up at the front. George Russell is 18 points back, and we go to Monaco next, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Which is normally, man, it is the how to not bin your car and try to win a race weekend.
The Pastor Maldonado form book strategy, basically. That should be fun. Yeah, as mentioned, yep, Norris leads the way by 13 points, but I wouldn't rule out people like the Threes, Sergio Sete Câmara, Aitken, and Markelov, who's in that chasing group right now with 46, 46, 43, and 36 points, respectively. Keep half an eye on them as the season goes on. But just the fact alone that we've had five different winners in the first six races, and only George Russell's repeated victory. It's been great. This is my first season covering Formula 2 full time and on the podcast as well, and it's been great. Everyone should watch Formula 2. Do it. Go out of your way. Thank me later if you haven't already. It is
the highlight of any Grand Prix weekend that they are a part of.
It's NXT Takeover Catalunya.
NXT Takeover Catalunya.
Yep, the Takeshi's Castle of Grand Prix motorcycle racing, or any Grand Prix in general these days. But yeah, a mixed bag of a Catalunya weekend where it seems like once again Formula 2 stole the show. If you haven't seen the Catalunya Grand Prix yet, just watch the 6-minute version on F1's YouTube channel. You'll be fine. Nothing of value would be lost. Sadly, that's most of the action we had to cover from Catalunya this weekend. After this quick musical break, we'll be back to talk about IndyCar and its Grand Prix of Indianapolis. And wait, what do you mean there's even less on the list here?
I thought it was May, guys. I thought it was May.
King forgot to tell you was that it's the shit part of May, like the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, and like it's like sometimes some races are just not very good on the IndyCar calendar, and it seems the Grand Prix of Indianapolis just has this knack of not being particularly fun. You know what this race needed, King? It needed more Quinadeli up the front.
Did it though? I love him, but did it though?
Yes, it did. Just have Quinadeli off sequence. It will save the Grand Prix for everybody.
So stop us if you've heard this before. Will Power is very good at being a North American open wheel driver.
Really? That's news to me. God, like from pole position, yeah, he took pole pretty comfortably in the end. And yeah, was pretty much unchallenged the entire race outside of a threat from our new favourite front runner in IndyCar, and as we now call him on this podcast, the one, the only, Bobby Wickens.
Hashtag the plot Wickens.
There's only one Bobby Wickens, and shout out to the awesome SPM who retweeted us basically doing darts chants, seeing Bobby Wickens up the front trying to win his first IndyCar race. I know who runs their Twitter. They are very cool people, but you guys are great. So thanks for entertaining us shitposting darts fans. We are greatly appreciative of this. But yes, as mentioned, the first two-thirds of the race was essentially Power versus Wickens. They were on different strategies. They both ran, you know, the stickier red tire first. Wickens put on a second set of those in the first round of stops. Power got his black tire harder compound stint out of the way. They flipped over on that after the second round of stops, and Power basically ate Wickens for breakfast during that third stint. Got up the front, and it was looking pretty straightforward outside of, you know, a crazy first, you know, turn one incident we'll talk about in a second here. I mean, the first corner was all sorts of interesting. We had about four or five wide situations going into the first corner. And anyone that's seen Indianapolis' road course will tell you, like, the runoff on turn one is short, shall we say. It's a bit of a narrow entry, as we soon found out, as we got a domino effect, aching, of, I think it was Newgarden who tapped Pagenaud, who then tapped Jordan King out of the race.
So what had happened was, Newgarden went into the side, like, tapped Pagenaud at his side. Pagenaud had the, you know, let off the throttle, pull out a little bit wide. Little did he know, Jordan King was making a run around the outside and goes right into the back of Pagenaud, and they both go off.
Yeah, out of all that, Jordan King lost two laps, but he did finish. So he did finish, but in a race where everybody finished, he was essentially a non-factor. He was 24th and last on the day.
Yeah, which is a real shame, given he qualified. He made the far six and qualified in fifth position ahead of series leader Joseph Newgarden, which is a real shame because King was having a fantastic weekend. He was. It was no coincidence. He was fast in the practice sessions as well, and King was just showing great speed in general.
Yes, that's right, Ryan. You looked great out there. We're very proud of you, and I know that once we get back on the road courses, you're going to find a way to get it all together. Good luck at Detroit.
Yeah, I'm really going to need it, guys. But I have a feeling when I get the car back from Ed, I'm going to do fantastic out there.
Good stuff. Yes, sadly, that was a very quick, effective end to what would have been a brilliant weekend for Jordan King up to that point. As mentioned, it was pretty much Power versus Wickens for two-thirds of the way. Running fourth at the time was Joseph Newgarden, who basically tried one audacious overtake too many down the backside of the track and spun out and put out a caution. God damn it, Joseph. Which is a rare mistake from Mr. Newgarden these days. He seems to be due for one of these a season. He might have just cashed his one in now and get it out of the way early. Nobody speak of Watkins Glen. But
still leads the championship.
He does somehow. Newgarden spins out after a tangle, drives over the curbs. Again, Spencer Pigot did that too on the open lap. Did you see Spencer Pigot take flight?
Yes, I did. I was about to mention that. Dude shot up 40 feet in the air. It looked like a video game glitch.
Drove over that.
It looked like one of those things where you were just like breaking iRacing's 15-year-old crash physics simulation. And the car just shoots up in the air and pirouettes around 100 times.
Yep, and almost takes out Takuma Sato in the process as well. Jesus. Spencer Pigot taking flight. But yeah, Newgarden spins out. We get a full course yellow. Everybody's in the pits for fresh tyres and a full tank of fuel. And it becomes a fuel-saving race. Now, a certain someone was off-sequence at the time. And as soon as he heard the words, fuel-saving, guess who comes into play? The guy who was eliminated in round one, was not having a very good weekend all the way through. Wait, what do you mean Scott Dixon's name's on this list? This isn't on the script. what do you mean Scott Dixon finished in second? He was nowhere all weekend.
What do you mean he started 18th?
Oh, IndyCar. Somebody pits off sequence, and next thing you know, they get brought into play due to a late caution. Always the way, isn't it? And, like the true champion Scott Dixon is, he's completely nowhere all weekend, and all of a sudden, second place. It turns into a fuel-saving race, and it turns into a fuel-saving shootout between Power and Dixon for the last 25 laps, which Power actually won in the end, believe it or not. He was able to hold off Dixon, and yeah, Power takes a fairly comfortable victory, and you never really looked like he was going to lose that one after the strategy swap from him and SPM. But, King, a nice reminder that Will Power is still really good at this shit.
Yeah, he's still really good. It's surprising he only has one championship.
Yeah.
This is his 12th consecutive season with a race win. Mm. This includes before and after unification. This includes his time with Walker Racing, KV Racing, and his trial run at Penske that turned into a full-time seat that he's now held for 9 years.
Yeah, Power is really, really good. Let's just not forget that he is really, really good at this shit. Full result rundown real quick. Power takes the win by 2.2 seconds from, as mentioned, from 18th on the grid and nowhere competitively all weekend, Scott Dixon. Why? Because Scott Dixon. That's why. in second, Robert Wickens, another brilliant drive from the Canadian. King, Team Canada is a thing, and Team Canada is going brilliantly.
But, yeah, it's going brilliantly. I know it may be a bit soon to make comparisons to this, But it really feels like Robert Wickens is going to be the Chase Elliott of IndyCar, where he's like, he's going to be able to get a ton of like top five finishes, but never break through and get that win. Like, it's starting to get a bit painful now.
Yeah,
I don't know. Will Power had said that Robert Wickens could be the best rookie he's seen in a long time, and that got people thinking, like, who was the last rookie that made this much of an immediate impact? Was it Scott Dixon in 2001? Was it Juan Pablo Montoya in 1999?
Alex Rossi?
No. But that, everyone, shut down your answers. It is Sebastian Bourdais in 2003. It is Sebastian
yes.
Bourdais in 2003.
And a perfect segue that he finished fourth and his third in the championship.
Sebastian Bourdais refuses to go away. He's rather good at this IndyCar stuff too. But yeah, Will Powell was very complimentary of Robert Wickens post-race. Said that he said he's a future champion, and he said it may even be this season. So very, very high praise for one Bobby Wickens. And it makes you wonder how high up the board he would be if it wasn't for being collected in St. Pete. And again, like having the...
Speaking of which, Alexander Rossi was fifth, and he closes to within 2 points of Newgarden's lead.
Indeed, Alex Rossi there. We've already kind of hinted at that, you know, the fact that it seems that like Andretti is Rossi's team now. 4 top 5 finishes in the first 5 rounds. If this was under any sort of debate, it isn't anymore. Alex Rossi is spectacular. He's just not going away here. Brilliant race from him, as always. Helio is back, everybody. Hey!
Helio never left, but he's back. And he still has...
magnificent hair.
Thank you. Helio Castroneves was sits. It looked like he hadn't stepped a day out of an Indy car.
Yeah, like Helio desperate to come back to the Penske team full time. Bless him. We're going to see him really perform for the 500 in a couple of weeks' time. But great to see Helio back, and another very solid result in sixth place as well, finishing just ahead of the mayor of Hinchtown, James Hinchcliffe, in seventh place, who is still fifth in the championship and has not finished outside of the top 10 so far this season. He's in title contention. This is a weird season that both SPMs are in the mix, and Wickens would probably be right at the top if it wasn't for his two indiscretions that weren't his fault this season. It's kind of weird how this one's played out, but SPM looks real, people. Like this is the season I think we were hoping that SPM were going to have, and I have to mention as well, like, Chapin out here is screaming about Reinhardt's race bad luck. Yes, quite right. Another engine failure. A misfire for Hunter Ray was the biggest grief there for him during that race, with him finishing down 80. Because again, like, outside of the two issues his car has had this season, fifth and second, Hunter Ray's been really good this year, just been cursed with really shit luck. More on him in a minute. But
Speaking of which, Simon Pagenaud, this was his best finish. His best finish of the year is eighth.
Huh? how did we suddenly end up like going back to 2015 Pagenaud?
Yeah. But you know, 2015 Pagenaud was also Indianapolis 500 contender Pagenaud.
Oh, that was the... I remember that was the first one we watched together when he was in the lead for a significant amount of that race before his wing got clipped. Just a thought. Simon Pagenaud in eighth. Nice comeback after the turn one discretion. Graham Rahal, another top 10 for him in ninth, ahead of maybe later Sato in 10th. Newgarden recovered to 11th after the spin. Another solid result for Zachary Clackery DeMackery in 12th place, who we got the news today. He's filling in for Pietro Fittipaldi in the number 19 Dale Coyne car for the Indy 500.
Yes!
Like, yeah, pop out your martini bottles, because ZCD is going to the 500.
ZCD is coming in there, and like, I can't take the mickey. He's actually that was a very good performance.
He's going to go in there by sea or by land. He's going to get that drive.
Hey, I see what you did there. Marco Andretti in 13th place in the 98. Tony Kanaan in 14th, who is still busy stealing Matt Day's last tear. Spencer Pigot in 15th. Max Chilton 16th. Gabby Chava 17th. As mentioned, Hunter Ray's misfire dropped him to 18th place in the end again, which could have been another top 10 finish for Hunter Ray easily if it wasn't for that. Kyle Kaiser, the rookie, in 19th. Draconian Kimball, back of a vengeance, in 20th place. Face Leist in 21st. Ed Jones, who had another collision with Kimball during that race. oh dear. So that King, we're going to have to get the Brits to stop fighting.
I don't think that's going to be possible.
Insubordination in the British camp. It's civil war at the moment between Kimball and Jones. Zach Veach in 23rd, and the aforementioned Jordan King a couple of laps down in 24th place. Looking at the IndyCar series standings at the moment, it is close. As mentioned, Joseph Newgarden still leads the way with 178 points, but Alex Rossi only 2 points back now on 176. You got to go back another 24 for Sebastian Bourdais in third, as King rubs his hands like Birdman in the background.
Yeah.
He's not going away this year, folks. Seb Bourdais is back. In some ways, he never left. Scott Dixon in fourth on 147. Like, Dixon has not looked that good at any point this season, and there he is in fourth place. Why? Because Scott fucking Dixon, that's why. Again, James Hinchcliffe, as mentioned, in 5th on 144, 2 points ahead of Graham Rahal on 142, another 7 back, and creeping his way up the board, Will Power, now on 135. Robert Wickens, or Bobby Wickens as we now call him on this show, in 8th as top rookie on 133, Hunter Ray on 125, and then Marco Andretti, of all people, rounds off the top 10, sorry Zoe, on 105. Bit of a surprise to see him that high up the board. He's ahead of Tony Kanaan, Simon Pagenaud, last year's 500 winner. Geez, there's a lot of quality names a little bit further down the board, which I think is kind of strange, but hey, we're still kind of early days yet on this one. Yes.
And now we can get in the actual month of May proceedings, the one that we genuinely care about, because we did have practice today. It got halted early due to rain, but you know, that's Indiana in May for you.
Moisture. Yes.
And they've already announced the starter of the race will be one
James Hunt.
Yeah, James Hunt, or Thor, son of Odin, from Asgard.
It's apparently Chris Hemsworth.
Apparently real humans call him Chris Hemsworth, which is just to borrow a quote from Lizzie, fuck me up.
I will take this. I would also like it if they got Daniel Brühl to wave the checkered flag at the end of it.
Perfect. Perfect.
For
there we
perfect
go
symmetry.
There we go. Yep, we, as mentioned, we had first practice today for the session. Simon Pagenaud was fastest today, best speed of 225.7. I wonder if that was under
a tow. We told you Pagenaud's coming up.
And in second, Helio. God bless Helio. There's still 40 minutes to go, actually, of this session as we're recording this now. But as it stands, Pagenaud's top with Helio Gashineva second, Joseph Newgarden third, Marco Andretti fourth, and Uncle Ed, Oval Master Ed Carpenter, rounds off the top five. Again, still 40 minutes to go, so that might not be the final results by the time this goes out. But
we're
going to
have a number of different practices as well. And then by the time this episode comes out, we'll also be preparing for time trials, the run for pole, and the race to see who gets bumped out of the field.
Yep, and the format's slightly different than what we're used to in terms of bump days and pole days. Bump day will be on Saturday, followed by the run for pole on pole day on Sunday.
So let me get this
which
straight.
Which is as it should be.
Yeah, so let me get straight. There's 35 runners, so that means there's going to be 2 bumped spots, right?
Yes.
Right. Anyone want to make a prediction? Which are the bottom? Which is the bottom two and doesn't make it?
I can't make a prediction until we get about a couple days into practice. I don't want to make a prediction. Everybody looks good. There are no teams that obviously look like they're in serious, serious trouble that their drivers cannot get them out of, or that their teams cannot get them out of. Oh, I don't want to pick this.
Yeah, it is far too difficult to think who's going to get bumped, because everyone's so close. And number two, it's still opening day. We don't have much information to go off of.
It's Carlin's first Indianapolis 500, but Matt Chilton led a sizable portion of the race, and Charlie Kimball squeaks out top 10 finishes every year, it seems.
Finished third in 2015.
It's Junkos's second effort, but Kyle Kaiser is very good. You've looked at other teams like the second or third cars or the fourth cars or an Andretti Tate's the fifth or the sixth cars. You think, well, they've still got solid teams behind them. Danica, they would cancel the race before Danica Patrick got the 500.
How about IndyCars like riding a bike? At least I hope.
Again, he's got Schmidt Peterson Motorsports behind him. Jay Howard can probably bullshit his way to a top five.
Did you say top five for a second there, RJ?
Well, nope. I'm sticking to it. That's my bold pick. Jay Howard's gonna make the Fast Nine.
Outside, we're gonna fight Jersey style. Yes, outside right now.
Is that Jersey, New York, or Jersey in the UK?
Yes.
Okay. Solid. Perfect.
Should we get into the news, fellas?
Yes, we have an assorted grab bag of news.
Indeed, and a big one dropped this morning as Venturi in Formula E has gained a old Brazilian. Apparently it's Felipe Massa. Felipe Massa is going to be in Formula E. Everybody get excited, yo.
Felipe Massa do Brasil!
Da-da-da!
And since it's Formula E, this is the EDM remix of Tame Impala Victoria.
Oh, God, no.
We should get Chris Kick on that. You'd find
Chris,
a way to...
If you're listening, please just drop like some crappy drum and bass drum beat over the top of this.
Corner Daily is out style.
EDM the shit out. EDM the shit out of this. But yeah, Felipe Massa's coming to Formula E, which is good. He brings with him over 250 Formula One starts, 30 seconds of a world championship, and 11 Grand Prix victories with him. The question is, will he become more Jean-Eric Vergne, or will he become more Jacques Villeneuve, who also raced for Venturi, mind you, for like two rounds?
For three races, despite having a two-year deal.
Man. It should be fun. I mean, I'm not the guy to get hype about Formula E, because I'm just not that dude, but yeah, that's a pretty cool hire to get Felipe Massa in there, the guy that's just come off F1. And if anything, it's nice walking proof that, yeah, it turns out they were kind of right about the whole Felipe Massa not really wanting to retire situation, you know? Another shitstorm for the Williams team to deal with. Fun times.
That's fine. Let's go back to single sweaters, single seaters, because we weren't entirely done with single seaters at Barcelona. We had GP3. I did not watch any of GP3.
Yes, I did not watch GP3 either.
Me free.
Let's just hit the highlights. ART continued to be good. Nikita Mazepin won the first race and took a 1-2-3 finish for ART. That's good. Mm-hmm. Giuliano Alesi won the sprint race from the front row. That is also good. So, hey, a team that is not ART won something at Barcelona. Well, not ART or Mercedes. And two second places for Antoine Hubert, give him the championship lead. The next race is at Paul Ricard in about 8 weeks, what seems like 19 years, because they're not going to Monaco.
Not going to Monaco, not going to Canada, so it's going
to
be a long way.
You know who is going to Monaco? A bunch of rich people of various skill levels driving their very old Formula One cars. We're jumping the set list, folks.
Rich
bastards!
That's a
good segue. We did not watch much of the Monaco Historics until we got ready to record.
Mm-hmm.
And man, there are thrills, spills, everything in between. Dude, when you put, like, inexperienced but wealthy drivers behind the wheels of some of the most difficult racing machines ever created, you're gonna get some action.
Tell us more, King, because, like, we call this the Ryan King, like, the Ryan King gets the lube out and gets, like, gets the sock out of the drawer and watches, like, cars from his youth go around Monaco, basically.
Oh, dear. Where it's like, let's see... probably my personal favorite classes to watch is always the, I think, like, yeah, in this one it was 66 to 71, that, you know, we have aero for the first time, guys, but these cars can still slide, where a guy in his, where a guy in his little, you know, T-Tray Formula One car decides to wing it around the outside, going around that long corner to Casino Square.
Oh, Lord.
Luckily, that ended up fine. In the slightly newer class of, you know, 72 to 76, aka
basically
the Hunt... Yeah, the Hunt Lauda class, basically. Some dude almost destroys his Ferrari.
Yikes.
Where they make contact heading into Mirabeau, and the guy, luckily enough, decommits at the last second to send his car down the escape road and not head first into the tire wall.
Yikes.
And also in the pre-61 class, 50s era Formula One, some dude gets a drive-through for aggressive driving, which is, like, insane to me, where it's like, dude, you got a penalty in a vintage F1 race.
Like, yeah, you know what the penalty was if you got caught for reckless driving in a Formula One race in the 50s? You were thrown from your fucking car.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably dead. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also weird to see these cars with, you know, like... obviously, because they have modern safety features, so they have roll hoops, they have seat belts, they have Hans devices. But man, it still looks dangerous as all hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, there are some names that I actually recognize on this entry list. Adrian Newey drove around a Lotus 49B. Paolo Barilla, who used to drive for Minardi back in the late 80s to early 90s, drove a Ferrari 312B from the 1970s. That was about as far as names I recognize, but man, how much is the insurance premium if you just write off one of these bad boys?
Oh God, I've
7 figures, easy.
Like that's the thing about this class. I've never heard of anyone actually completely writing off a car because they're considered so valuable that they always rebuild them. But I've never seen anyone actually damage their car to the point where they can't rebuild them. That'd be a nightmare.
That would
not
be
only,
very, very bad.
Not only for the financial value loss, but the historic value loss.
King, like, it's going to require more than that little box on the insurance form, isn't it?
like, how do you explain to Ferrari that, yeah, you know that chassis that used to run in the 70s? It's gone now. So.
At least you could get like a Formula V car from the 1950s as like a rental, right?
It's basically the same.
Though I do love the restraint from the historic, from the Auto Club de Monaco, where they're like, yeah, we're setting the upper limit on car age to 1976. Nothing newer than that will race here, because this Grand Prix has been getting more popular and popular each year that they run it. They run it every other year. But yeah, it's been like they had 40,000 people over the 3 days. And man, the restraint to not say like, yeah, we're going to have ground effects cars, guys. Ground effects cars.
Ground Monaco. Yeah.
Please. Yes. Please check out the highlights of these and enjoy some old cars thrashing it around Monaco. And also cry at the fact that some of these drivers do not know what they're doing in the rain. Bless them. They're trying their best.
They're like stalled cars at the start of like every other race. They're like, well, cars like legit have mechanical failures during some of these races, and those are the scariest moments.
They were indeed.
Let's go a little bit up the road here. Again, we're jumping around the set list. King, did you watch Formula 3 at PAL?
I've seen the highlights.
Okay, yeah, I basically got it written down. Guan Yu Zhao wins for China, first race of the season. Ralph Aaron wins the last race of the weekend. And Sasha Fenestraz, in his first weekend as a full-time F1 driver, this is another name to watch. He's 18 years old. He was the successor to Lando Norris as the champion of Euro Cup Formula Renault 2.0. Won the middle race, and he leads the championship after one round. So definitely keep an eye on that. It's kind of a thin grid, but there are still some good quality drivers in that Formula 3 grid as well. Between Fenestras, Dan Ticktum is there. Marcus Armstrong is the latest promotion for the Ferrari Driver Academy. They have Jayan Dhervala, Inam Ahmed, who scored a podium finish. Guan Yu Zhao, of course, Ralph Aaron. Mick Schumacher, we'll get it together at some point. It's not the star-studded grid of recent years, but there's still some good value to be had.
Yeah, because we talked about GP3 earlier in the show, and we kind of have to realize that both for Formula 3 and GP3, that this is their last season. There's going to be a merger, and it is going to be next year's field with the combined, you know, GP3 and F3 fields. It's going to be a show, and it is going to – I'd probably say Formula 3 is finally – gonna be spoken in the same way that we talk about Moto 3 and Moto GP.
Really? Oh, please stop. I already have an erection. I don't even watch bikes.
Yeah, and like the way that they're talking about trying to come up with a calendar that is also like, it's not solely gonna be a Grand Prix support series, because they're trying to make an aim of getting Macau to still remain as the Formula 3 season finale. I don't know how Pau's going to work into this. Maybe they'll keep Pau on the calendar as well, because that's, you know, an historic Formula 3 race. But, yeah, they're trying to create the most exciting championship at this level to actually try to make people care about this championship.
It's going to be fun. Let's cut over across the Eurasia continent over to Japan and Super Formula, where Ryo Hirakawa put in the fastest time in qualifying. Tomoki Nojiri for Honda took P1 because Hirakawa had a 3-place grid penalty for plowing into his teammate at the hairpin. I'm so proud of you, son, but why did you do that? But the big winner of the weekend is Fogg.
Like, I can't see RJ anymore. RJ is just gone.
He's disappeared.
Yes, Fogg. Yeah, Fogg got a great start, led wire to wire, and ended up canceling the race at Autopolis. Poor visibility is second, and the makeup race to be scheduled at a later date is third. Actually, this does kind of suck, though, because that's one marquee race off the calendar. The next round is at Tsugo in 2 weeks' time, where we'll see Dan Ticktum make his series debut. There's that Ticktum guy again coming up. Also, Tom Dillman is in the number 7 car for Team LeMond, taking the place of Pietro Fittipaldi, who was going to miss this race anyway because of Indianapolis, and Tom Dillman may have to stay a little bit longer. Shoutouts to Senna Sakaguchi as well. This was going to be his only race in the car, and it turns out he doesn't even get to drive. He's back to Formula 3.
Justice, right?
That's the hardest feeling, when you have a one-off ride in a series and that one-off race doesn't happen.
Of course.
Goodness. Should we cut a little bit further to Asia at Shanghai, which is going to be the projected home of the 1000th Formula One Grand Prix? It's not going to be at Silverstone.
How dare they?
Well, because due to calendar constraints, as a fact that time exists, the 1000 Grand Prix would have to take place in April, or the season would have to be delayed to start in start at the end of April. So I guess this was the best compromise.
Yeah, for reference here, the WEC Six Hours of Silverstone was recently held in April. It snowed recently at that race weekend. It snowed.
Yeah.
It's...
Let's put it to you this way. As friend of the show Sarah Connors rightly pointed out on Twitter, you put 140,000 British people in Northamptonshire in the cold in April, which is known for having a shit ton of rain. You are going to have a miserable race weekend. Do not do it, okay?
Yeah.
Like, do not do your 1000th race in the UK in April. Don't do it.
And I'm pretty sure some of us might remember the last time Formula One raced at Silverstone in April, because it was within our lifetimes. It was the 2000 British Grand Prix.
Wasn't that a complete washout?
Yep.
Yeah, I do remember that one as it goes. That was, oh Lord, that was a... slippery, shall we say.
The race slippery. The race was dry, but everything else wasn't.
And if it happens in Shanghai as projected, assuming the calendar stays the same, good. Shanghai has a much better racetrack with much better fans and a crowd comprised of much better people. It's a much better city. And I'm proud of Shanghai. You're doing good, sweetie. You're doing great. The racing is good there. And you have culture.
If you can see it through all the fog.
If you can see it through all the fog. Like, Shanghai has been a reliable stop in the Grand Prix calendar for... I'm pretty sure next year would be their 15th Chinese Grand Prix.
No, to be fair, it's a good venue, and it's a good racetrack, and it has produced many a classic, to be fair. Like China, I think, is one of the more underrated and underappreciated races on the calendar. So, you know, I have no problem with the thousand races happening to be in China. Big market. Good track, good Grand Prix, good venue.
And actually, I need to self-correct. I made a very common mistake. Next year would be the 16th Chinese Grand Prix, the 15th anniversary of the first Chinese Grand Prix.
Ah, there you go. You got your years mixed up.
WrestleMania 25th anniversary of Chinese Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you did there, because I never get years mixed up on this podcast. Ever.
No, it's that whole, like... You don't celebrate the anniversary, like, you don't celebrate the anniversary of your birth, you know, on the day of your birth. So your first birthday isn't the day you're born; it's the year after.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian Vettel's brother Fabian is now a Lamborghini Junior driver as well.
Hey, that's nice.
Yeah. It's awkward seeing people say, oh, it's so sad to see that Fabian's too old to get into single-seaters. And I'm like, isn't he, like, only 19? And, like, yeah, he's 19.
Yeah, he's far too old.
that's scary. I feel so old.
he's clearly, like, 4 years ahead of the curve. Like, jeez. He's the Ian Wright of racing drivers now. He's going to break through at, like, 23. Oh, dear. But, guys, are we already done here?
Yeah, no, I believe we're done here.
We got one last story, because we talked about Historic Monaco earlier in the episode.
Sure.
And recently, the release date was dropped for F1 2018, the official video game, the FIA Formula One World Championship.
Yes, we can confirm it exists. It is definitely a thing that is going to happen.
The game will be released August 24th, which is, I believe, the same weekend as Belgian Grand Prix.
Yes.
They already confirmed that we'll be adding even more classic cars into the game, as well as an expanded career mode.
Give me my Jordan 191, goddammit.
With the official tagline of the game being, make headlines.
Ooh, spicy. So that means interviews are coming back?
Yeah, they, like... Codemasters themselves even, like, fuel this rumor hinting that, yeah, that will most likely be making a return.
So, like, is there going to be, like, bonus points if you, like, tell wisecracks in press conferences like Sebastian Vettel did through 2016?
How many Ferrari loyalty points do you get if you back their threat to leave the sport?
115,000.
I heard there were some terrible microtransactions right now that if you wanted to start your career with, like, Alfa Romeo, Sauber, or whatever, you have to pay, like, $29.99 worth of microtransactions to do it.
It's true.
Oh, can I tell random drivers that I've had on-track spats with to suck my balls, honey?
Or you can do that. That's just you screaming at the TV rather than it being an actual ride in the game. Because we all know the quality of their eye is fantastic, top notch. It is a thing. It'll be out on August 24th, a week after I turn 26. So expect, you know, numerous amounts of coverage on the channel when that game inevitably comes out, and maybe like one whole stream on YouTube or something.
And McLaren neither confirming or denying they're coming to IndyCar next year, either as a new team or as a partner with Andretti or Ray Hall, or the possibilities may be endless. Who knows?
Who knows?
That's one thing to watch for silly season.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure it's like, hey, whichever you two teams drop Honda, we're definitely on board.
That should be fun. Keep half an eye on that one as it goes on. Nothing really to golf that we didn't already know already, but certainly worth keeping an eye on. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. And I think we're just about done here, folks. So,
yep. Time trials for Indy next weekend. Formula E in Berlin. Super GT in Suzuka. NASCAR has an all-star race, I guess. That's fine.
Yeah.
And, oh, remember, a certain former Formula One world champion will be doing a demo run at the Berlin E-Prix.
Oh, the return in a race car of Nico Rosberg, you say?
Family man Nico Rosberg is back.
Ryan King will be glued to the television. He'll be sitting like 3 inches away like a Simpsons cartoon. Nico, why can't you come back? But as he ends up being a team boss instead, most likely. Anywho, that'll just about do it for this week's episode of Motorsport 101. As mentioned, you'll be back next week with all our coverage of the Indy 500 qualifying runs and Formula E in Berlin as well. Places you can find us one more time are on youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter @motorsport_101, and if you'd like to follow our personal handles, you can @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, and @RJOConnell. Again, motorsport101.net is our website for all our episodes, and if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. Jesus, freaking trolling me in the middle of my outro while talking about the Hawks. If the Hawks win the lottery, I'm getting a lottery champs tattoo. God. RJ, stop ruining my outro. How dare you? As mentioned, $5 gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live. As mentioned, episode 60 will be out this weekend, all about World Superbikes at Imola. God, I love Imola. Jonathan Reyes, double victory. Jules Clizel winning in Supersport, as well as Kenan Sofoglu's retirement. We're talking about that as well. And Anna Carrasco whooping that ass and destroying a bunch of immature men in a Supersport 300 race. Well worth the listen alone, if you ask me. And of course, $10 gets you into our Discord server. So if you want to be a Patreon backer, patreon.com/motorsport101. We'll be back next week to talk about, as mentioned, Formula E in Berlin and the Indy 500 qualifying runs and preview the biggest race of the year, the Indy 500 itself. Can't wait for that. Day of Classics 3 coming very soon to a Motorsport 101 YouTube channel near you. Just saying.
Yeah, we still don't have a subtitle for Day of Classics 3 yet.
Yeah, you mean like Alonso didn't call this the biggest race in the world anymore? That one? Are we going with that? No, didn't think so. Me neither. Right, let's get out of here. I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
You are the world champion! Just a quick note, post-credits, by the way. Thanks to everyone that has sent well wishes and words of support towards my brother, who was in an unprovoked assault earlier this week. I mentioned on Twitter, me and Ryan and the whole Harrison family are very, very grateful for that. Thanks.